of the first questions I always ask. And will you pronounce your first and last name and your pronouns for me?
Brianne Leeson, and my pronouns are she, her.
All right. And welcome to another episode of The Pursuit of Evolution. This week, I have Brianne, who is an artist, writer, and voice actor in Dallas, Texas. She is the creator of the queer supernatural audio drama podcast, Today's Lucky Winner. Brianne is autistic and ADHD, receiving her diagnosis at 30 years old, which is going to be kind of the central point of what we're here to chat about today. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so I'm just going to dive right into it then. In doing some research for this episode, you got diagnosed with ADHD first and then autism a little bit later, correct?
Yeah.
Walk me through that process a little bit. Kind of how did that come about?
Yeah, so at a few months into the pandemic, like everyone, my mental health took a fucking toll, but I had started behaving in ways that I didn't quite understand. I was having these massive meltdowns. And for most of my life, I got told there were panic attacks, and I thought I was just having panic attacks while also being a bitch. But something was different. Like I got so overwhelmed. I couldn't focus on anything at all. Like my routines were in shambles. So my therapist was like, "Hey, so I have ADHD and I've known you since you were a teenager and, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck." So he recommended I try to go see a specialist about a diagnosis. And first specialist went terribly. The first specialist was like, "You would have been diagnosed earlier in life. I think you're just depressed." And I was like, "I've been depressed. This ain't it. Like, this is not it. It's a very different thing." But the second one was like, you very clearly have combined type ADHD. Like, very clearly, you have all of these coping strategies and you overcompensate for a lot of things. So it probably didn't get noticed, but yeah, you have ADHD. And that was in November of 2020. And I got put on medication, and that has positively affected my life. Like, it takes me half an hour to change my bedding instead of 4 hours, and I accidentally put up a shelf in the meantime.
That's perfection.
Yeah. So that helped, but the meltdowns were still there. And I was like, I feel like I have part of this puzzle figured out, but my behavior, I still don't understand some of the things I'm doing. I was panicking at the drop of the hat. Like, if I told myself I'm going to have this for dinner and then my partner had eaten that thing and I didn't get the thing I thought I was going to have, I was crying on the kitchen floor. And I'm like, "Hey, I know this isn't a big deal. Like, why is this such a big deal for me right now? I'm cognizant of the fact that I'm overreacting and I can't stop myself." So I was researching and looking at things, and I saw a very basic Venn diagram of ADHD and autism. And that's where I said, "Oh, geez, well, I got the whole list on this autism side too, I think. Ooh, okay, I have to do some reading." And that's what led me to go take some of the tests. And in the middle of taking the tests, I broke down at some of the questions I was reading, because I was like, everyone does this, right? Like, everyone's doing this all of the time, right? Right? And I was asking one of my partners, and he was like, "I don't know." Turns out he is also autistic. So I'm not exactly the best person to ask.
Right.
But I was asking some other friends. They're like, "I don't do that." And they're like, "You're telling me you do this all the time?" I'm like, "Yes, you don't do this? This isn't how your brain works?" So it took several months to go through that whole process during my assessment, but I pretty quickly knew. Yeah. Like, it answered questions I had my whole life, more than the ADHD had.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had a similar experience. I have PTSD and a brain injury, and the PTSD diagnosis was like a big relief, but there was still something not quite right. And when we got the brain injury component figured out, it was like, okay. And then it became the game some days of like, which is winning today? Like, do you find like the battle between there's the TikTok joke of like the ADHD is kind of complete chaos, but the autism needs systems and structures and kind of that clash. Do you find that in yourself now too?
I do. And weirdly enough, I had started writing my show before I knew I had ADHD or that I was autistic. And the two main characters are very clearly just my ADHD and my autism. And that's they're best friends, but they're constantly fighting.
Right.
And that's kind of what it feels like. I so often find my ADHD is writing checks that my autism cannot cash, like at all.
Yep.
And because there's part of me that's like, I want to go do all this social stuff. I want to go do this. But I don't know when I have reached my capacity for stress or for doing too much until I'm at my breaking point because of the autism. So it's like, okay, I played D&D tonight with my friends and now I think I have to sleep for a week. I did way too much. It's hard because I'm never going to find a one way of doing something that's going to make both parts of my brain happy.
Yeah.
It's this constant like tug between the two, like, right. Okay, I have to give the ADHD what it wants. And then, okay, dial it back. I have to give the autism what it wants. And I'm still learning that balance. It's hard.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how has this been emotionally getting official diagnosis? Like having those labels, was that a relief, a burden? How has that kind of played out for you?
It's been a relief for sure. And like, in the autistic community, I got an official assessment because I knew I wouldn't believe anything otherwise for myself. And I think that's largely based in trauma around how my mental health was treated growing up, because I have been on some sort of medication or seeing a specialist since I was 6.
Wow.
Because like, yeah, at 8 years old was the first time I had told my mom, I don't want to be alive. And that, now that I know, I was probably an overload. Right. And when I'm overloaded and having a meltdown, it's like anything but this. But you put a weighted blanket on me and put some headphones on me, and I'm like, let's go watch cartoons. I'm feeling great. And it's like, it's not the same as depression. It's like, I am in agony right now and I need help. And I got put on meds and stuff over and over and got labeled as having treatment-resistant depression. And I have been on every type of antidepressant and anti-anxiety med under the sun. And there are several years of my life where I was just depersonalized for most of it because of the meds, because that's not what I needed.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what was happening.
Yeah. If you're treating the wrong thing the wrong way, it's not going to get you any results. If anything, it's just going to get you a bunch of really negative side effects, outcomes.
Yeah. So it was really reassuring and affirming. Like, you have been right your whole life when you've told people, like, I don't think I'm depressed. And when you're depressed, they say, well, go out and spend some time with your friends, go out and do things. Well, when you're on autistic burnout, that is the opposite of what I need. So all of these times I got told, hey, staying in your room and drawing and watching Star Trek reruns is not good for you right now. You need to go out. Actually, no, fuck you. That's exactly what I need. So it's given me permission to take care of myself in ways that feel natural, that I would have anyway, that I don't think I would have otherwise. But I will say, in the autistic community, self-diagnosis is very much valid, because there are things, because I have an official diagnosis now, there are things that I can, and you are not going to find someone to assess an adult for under $1,000.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And there are so many hurdles in that too. Like, people have lost their kids in custody battles because they have an autism diagnosis. They get CPS called on them when they wouldn't otherwise. There's so many cultural things, especially when you have it at the intersection of race and disability too, that, you know, someone can't hide their race. They can try to hide being autistic, which is autistic masking. So if someone is self-diagnosing autism, They're not just taking one test. Like, you're looking into everything. You're spending hours on the internet. Like, I know, but I did have an official assessment. And it was freeing. Like, I get to dismantle all of this stuff people told me about myself.
Yeah. I was curious if you're open to talking about it. And so you'll have to do a little backstory for us, because it's kind of a two-part question. A little bit of your upbringing, because your mother, if I remember correctly, is Puerto Rican and fundamentalist.
Yes.
And I'm curious the impact that has played then in, is that why, or is it race? Is it gender? Why do you think autism was overlooked when you were so steeply entrenched in mental health? Because so often I hear people getting adult diagnosis who weren't seeing mental health professionals until they were an adult to begin with. Like, you were already in this system so deeply. Why did it get overlooked? And what role has that played in your mother's dynamics played in your processing of all this?
Yeah, another layer about it makes it more interesting is my mother is a retired doctor.
Oh, shit.
I think there are so many layers to why it got missed. I think the time, just the time where I was a child, you know, it's the early 90s, and I was, you know, your parent isn't going to be too concerned when, like, oh, my 2-year-old is starting to read. Hey, fucking sweet, cool. That doesn't mean anything,
right?
And now my mom claims she suspected I was autistic. I don't know how true that is, but the testing was entirely biased towards children who were assumed to be male.
Right.
Like, even the questions on these tests assume some sort of masculine-leaning child, where they ask you about, does your child do this with the wheels on trucks? On toy trucks, and does your child do this? So if your kid didn't play with trucks, you'd be like, no, my kid doesn't play with trucks. But
right,
it might not be into those.
Yeah, giant. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that with the autism, because that's a very common conversation in the ADHD community, and the so many females getting diagnosed, female presenting, female socialized, getting diagnosed so much later in life is what we have kind of stereotyped ADHD as, and all the diagnostic criteria is so heavily based on boys that it screwed the rest of us.
And I think autism is that to such an even higher degree, because it is also based, in children coming from, like, very Anglo-centered white homes. Like,
right.
Does your child only want to eat chicken nuggets and, like, all these things? Like, okay, I was eating the same food over and over again, but it was not chicken nuggets. Like, yeah. I have same foods, but it doesn't fit this stereotype. I do think it was the time, and I do think that, so in the autistic community, so autism, they say it's a spectrum, but it's not less autistic to more autistic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's more of like a circular chart where there are these little pie slices, and each of them is an autistic trait. So, like, sensory hypersensitivities and hyposensitivities. So some people are non-speaking and some people don't shut up, and I'm more towards that end. And there are certain traits that they expect you to be one thing. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I spoke a lot to them, well, you'd have trouble speaking if you were autistic.
Right.
But they didn't look at the fact that the way I was speaking was mimicking big chunks of phrases I heard from adults.
Yeah.
So at 2, if I needed someone to listen to me say something, I would be like, we need to have a discussion.
And what 2-year-old talks like that?
Yeah, I couldn't use any of those words in isolation. I just mimicked what I had heard someone say. I would get pronouns confused. So, like, me and you, I would swap them. And that's a really common autistic thing. But the diagnostic criteria tends to look at someone who is non-speaking, or mm-hmm. look at someone who is always hypersensitive to things. I'm hypersensitive to a lot of things, but when it comes to things like touch, I'm hyposensitive. So my my pain tolerance is high to a very distressing amount where I haven't gotten help with things that were really wrong with me because I didn't know anything was wrong.
Right.
So I think back then, it's still a problem now, but I think back then there was one specific way that someone would present on the spectrum that was most commonly diagnosed. And that became, I think, what a lot of professionals thought was the only way an autistic person looked.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've met an autistic person, you've met one autistic person.
Yeah.
Because we all have our beautiful mix of our different traits and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think because I could mask and I did well in school, they were largely unconcerned. My mom thought, like, of course she's going to be a little weird. She's really smart.
Right. Right. Smart people are quirky, not autistic.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the older I got, it was just, oh, she's just the manic pixie dream girl stereotype. It's not autism.
Right.
It's like, I'm not doing any of this to be quirky. I promise.
Right. Right. Life would be a lot easier if I was less quirky. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have much of a relationship with your mom at this point? Like, are you, I guess that's a really big question given your upbringing. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Do you have much of a relationship with her?
We talk. We do okay, but there are large portions of my life that she's not granted access to. There's some boundaries I've had to set up because who I am innately is at odds with a lot of the stuff that she core centers her life around. And the logic and reason that I know I am hardwired to work with, especially understanding that I'm autistic, it's like I am hardwired to function in a different way than my mom. And there's not a lot I can do to try to make her understand my point of view at this point.
Right.
There's not. And I think my therapist put it really well. Things that are factual in my world and the rules of my universe and how things work, they are not the same in the world she's operating in. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have that same baseline of this is how the universe works, we're not going to get anywhere talking about that stuff. So I've set some very clear boundaries and things are okay.
That makes
sense.
Yeah,
they're as okay as they're going to be. Yeah.
So does she know then about like the ADHD and autism diagnosis, and it's just not a topic that we go beyond at that point?
She knows now. She got an ADHD diagnosis later in life, which having a mom who has ADHD makes a child far more likely to be ADHD or autistic.
Yeah.
Or both. So she like affirms and accepts like, yeah, you're definitely autistic, but there's a lot of stuff where she'll ask me like, how's this going? And it's like, yeah, I realized, you know, this thing I got punished for a lot as a kid was actually an autistic trait. And then she's like, it feels like a personal attack.
Right.
And that's where a lot of the cultural stuff comes in too. And I've talked to several other Latinx autistic people who are like, I think a lot of the way that we operate is seen as misbehavior.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, and we are punished for things that non-Latinx autistic kids might not be punished for to the same degree or at all.
Right.
So a lot of the things I did, it was like, well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do this thing more because you need to get over it and you're trying to be difficult. So I'm going to do this thing even more because you have to learn.
Right.
And I think a lot of that comes from the sort of need to survive in a predominantly white culture. And I think the root of it is like, hey, you have to work this much harder,
right,
to get to the baseline of everyone else. So I do think a lot of that is like very much generational trauma of colonialism and compensating. But yeah, she's very much affirming of it. But sometimes I'm like, I'm not calling you a bad mom. I definitely did not say that. I made sure I did not. I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah, I've been having similar conversations with my mom I actually am in the midst of, am I ADHD or autistic and or both? Doing all of the reading, deciding if I want to get diagnosed, all of that. And my brother's very classically ADHD, what boys look like through and through. And I think that's where I got missed. And then my mom talks about, she's like, oh, I'm sure I'm autistic. And I'm like, can we look at my childhood and I'll ask her something? And she's like, well, I was doing my best. I'm like, no, I'm not attacking. You absolutely, it's not an attack. You absolutely have done your best mm-hmm. with how she was raised. My mom has her own trauma. And like, I'm just reflecting like, oh, what we saw as me being good at self-soothing or me being a very independent child or my ability to kind of flow from one social group to the next, like masker. Like my mom, there was always a running joke in our family. We knew who I was hanging out with the most because I'd start picking up their mannerisms.
Yeah.
And just in the last few months, I was like, oh, because they talk about in those assessments, like, do you watch TV to learn how to people? And I'm like, no, because we weren't really allowed to watch TV. But it dawned on me that like, oh, I learned how to people from watching other people. And I just did what my friends did. And that's how I did it.
One of them that blew my mind in that line of thinking is when you read a book and it's described, like someone's expression has been described to you in reference to how they're feeling. Did you also try to make that expression yourself and go, huh, this means that we're feeling that? Okay, I'm going to remember that for no particular reason. Cool.
I still
keep reading.
I still do that to this day. My husband's little catch me reading. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, she was excited and she gasped. And he's like, you don't have to do. And I'm like, I was just trying it out.
I was just doing it. I was just trying it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many ways we do that stuff and don't even realize it.
Yeah. And I think it's important to be able to, I think this is where a lot of people get trapped is they feel slighted that they didn't get diagnosed till they were adulthood. And so they are angry at their parents or they are angry at society. And I think there's this, I'm not saying that's wrong or invalid, but there's a tipping point of navigating those emotions and being able to process and understand some of our past for me to be able to work through some past trauma and find places for it within new context was healing to me and helps me move forward without then hating the last 37 years of my life or being mad at my mom. Like I think there's a conversation I had about navigating what all of this means as we get these diagnoses and have this wealth of new information to unravel.
Yeah. And like, I definitely think there is a grieving process and being angry is a natural part of the grieving process. But if you get stuck at that stage of the grieving process, then you're not moving forward through it. So there are times where I'll recall something or something will happen and I will get angry all over again because it's not linear. But yeah, now I'm working on giving myself permission to do all these things I didn't let myself do because autistic people who aren't diagnosed until later in life, we have all these internal rules we set for ourselves too.
Yeah.
That I thought everyone had these internal rule sets of things that they can and cannot do for reasons that have to do with something else that happened. And I'm like, oh, some people just exist.
Yeah. Which is a great. So can you explain a little bit what masking is? Because we've mentioned it. It's a common conversation piece in these conversations and a little bit of where are you at with masking, learning to unmask that as kind of a personal journey?
Yeah. So masking is basically when an autistic person hides their autistic traits and suppresses them to try to pass as neurotypical. And it's not always intentional. It is a trauma response. It's a survival mechanism. There's no lie intended when someone does it. And it is hard. It is directly related to the high suicide rate in autistic people. Our average life expectancy is 36, largely due to self-harm. And one of the direct correlators is all the energy spent masking. So I don't naturally understand social cues and interpret them. So when I'm in a new social situation, every new social cue coming at me is like someone's asking me to do a math problem. And I fucking suck at math. I'm not that flavor of autistic person. But I'm having to do that while also being cognizant of what my body's doing. And like, I'm masking now, it's unintentional, but I'm adding tone to my voice. I'm making facial expressions I wouldn't make otherwise, because when I speak the way I naturally do, people do not interpret me the way I intend to. And holistic people more often than not will assume the worst.
Yeah. When I 100%, when I first started doing online content and running an online business, I kept getting told how boring my videos were. And I realized it's because that's how I spoke. And that's how I have a very flat affect. And I have learned to, I mean, obviously you can see my face, we're on Zoom, but like lots of eyebrow raising and lots of smiling. And it's a thing I have learned, especially now in our Zoom world, that neurotypicals really feed well off of. I feel like I'm better engaged. I'm still trying to decide how much of it is masking versus how much of it is finally me not toning down. Because I was the kid who was always told to slow down, quiet down. You talk too much, you talk too loud.
Yeah.
And I shut it down so hard. And so now I'm trying to like figure out like where's me versus where's masking in now being expressive in certain ways.
Yeah. And it's, and masking is difficult because there are times I do need to mask.
Yeah.
Professionally, for my own safety. Mm-hmm. And for BIPOC autistic folks, it can be a life or death thing. Because like I said earlier, they cannot hide their skin color. They can try to hide that they're autistic. Yeah. Because autistic people are also more likely to be victims of police violence too. So there are people who live at these intersections where they have to mask for so much of their life, even though it is causing them harm, because the systems have not changed and they're forced to. So for me, I learned to mask early. Looking back at my hobbies and my interests and even my degree, I was a theater kid. So I learned, this is what I do when I'm acting like I'm feeling this way. I have a degree in linguistics and my minor is in anthropology. Sociolinguistics was my favorite part of linguistics. So for me, when I'm speaking, I am deliberately choosing each and every word. And there was something on TikTok, and I wish I remember the person who said it so I could attribute it, basically saying holistic communication. And holistic means non-autistic for anyone. That's the vocab word of the day. Holistic communication is intuitive, and autistic communication is intellectual.
Ooh.
So I am very much having to choose what I'm saying. And I think the closest thing I can describe it to as, imagine having to tell yourself, grab my coffee mug, sip my coffee, do this. I have to do that with my words. So all of my life up to this point has made me very fast at it. But yeah, masking is hiding discomfort. I thought everyone was miserable when they ate at a restaurant. I assume so many things about like, nobody really knows when to stop making eye contact, right? 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 So I'm guessing with eye contact and forcing myself to make it. And even though it feels kind of like someone seeing me naked, like I'm getting too much information.
Yep.
Like I'm downloading too much and I'm like, I have not heard a word they said. I'm very uncomfortable. Look away. Now look back at them. And I have to go in manual. Like I don't have an automatic mode for social stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just hiding my discomfort and my confusion a lot of the time. And it takes years off of our lives.
Yeah.
But I also have to.
Right. If you're comfortable, what are a little bit of the ways? So a lot of times then when it comes to being in a space where, I mean, we've referenced it several times throughout the conversation of being burnt out, being exhausted, you know, needing that quiet time, and Star Trek reruns after social stuff. What are some of your go-to ways to let go of that burden of masking, to recover from masking, kind of that whole category of recovering from masking?
So one of the things you often realize, like late diagnosed people, is how much of your hobbies are actually stimming. So I've always been really active, and I don't know if it's the combo of the ADHD and the autism, but I never stop. Like on the ADHD screening, when they say, do you feel as if you're being pulled along by a motor? I'm like, literally all the time. Is that not everyone? So I like to run. I like to lift. I did gymnastics as a kid. I did competitive dance. And there are proprioceptive stims, like your relation to where you are in space. There's vestibular stims, like moving, and they mess like anything to kind of activate your vestibular system, like the rocking back and forth frequently does. And there are things like, as a kid, I would hula hoop while I watched TV because I couldn't sit down. And
right,
like that was just like, I'll just hula hoop while I watch TV. Great. I'm going to, how long have I been watching TV? It's been 3 hours. Jeez. And I'm also like an artist and I like fiber arts. I crochet constantly, constantly crocheting. And that's STEM. Like I'm touching different textures. I'm moving my fingers. For my autistic brain, it loves the repetition of crochet. And there are just a lot of things that I loved growing up that I either got told, like, don't do that this much. Stop doing stuff that. That's weird. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no, I was doing that because it was healthy for me. So I'm doing a lot more of those things, giving myself permission to work out as long as I fucking want. I tend to listen to the same songs on repeat, which is very much a STEM, which as a kid, my mom, I watched a few movies so much that I actually wore out the VHS. But that was back when you couldn't just find another copy of 101 Dalmatians.
Right.
And I would have a fucking meltdown.
Yeah.
So I will watch my comfort shows over and over again.
Yep.
I will give myself permission to not engage with people other than my partners and stay at home and hide in my little room. You can see my room on Zoom, but I've made it into a little den that is specifically curated for like my sensory profile. Like,
yeah,
this is the place I'm comfortable. So I think a lot of it is going back to things like, what did I enjoy as a kid that made me feel better that I got told to stop doing? And for autistic people, a lot of that is pouring yourself into your special interests.
Yeah.
And one of my special interests has always been writing. Like I kept a journal like 5 to 10 pages a day since I was like 8 or 9 years old.
Wow.
And it's been really fun for me because my podcast is me engaging in my special interest, but people engage with me socially about it in a way that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So pouring myself into doing that more has been, I think, one of the most groundbreaking things for me.
Yeah. Yep. My podcast is part of a special interest for me too. I love having conversations and picking people's brains, which is, I think, driven some by like, wait, I thought everybody's brain was like this. And so I want to see the inside of other people's brains. And I also often joke with people that I got into podcasting so I could ask inappropriate questions in appropriate setting. And I love it because like, oh, it's the guise of a conversation. And I give all of my guests, as I did with you, the caveat at the beginning of a call. If you don't like a question, just let me know. But it's still like, is appropriate to ask in this setting. And so, yeah, it's very much the same. And I can talk about my show and talk about my guests. And I have spent too many hours studying the like behind the scenes of building podcasting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's fun when you find a way to kind of integrate. I hate that this has to happen, but also when you can integrate our special interest in a way that like neurotypical society accepts or knows how to interact with.
Yeah. And I kind of saw my podcast as engaging in that way. But one thing that I think has been really cool since I started the Patreon for my show, and we have a Discord, I swear to God, most of the people who listen to the show are ADHD and or autistic for my show. And I very deliberately decided after I learned I was ADHD and autistic to put the names of those things on the characters that fit them. Because I'm like, there's so many characters that I loved growing up that I identified with that if a single writer would have called them autistic in the show, I would have known I was autistic earlier.
Yeah.
I would have.
Yeah.
So it's been a great way to engage. And I actually had like a younger listener of my show reach out and say, hey, I went and got screened for ADHD and it turns out I have ADHD and I really identify with the autistic character and that assessment is coming up next because I'm pretty sure I'm autistic. Like, thank you for writing that. And like, this kid's 17, and I started weeping. I was like, oh my God, they get to go through their 20s, like, knowing who they are. I'm so happy for them.
That's so amazing and so powerful.
So that makes all of it worth it.
Yeah.
Like, all of it.
Yes. And I think that's an amazing thing I want to highlight, of putting these names on these characters when you know that's who they are, or that they're, you know, I was just in a conversation about Spencer Reed of Criminal Minds, and I'm like, no, yeah, there's one reference.
That's what one of the characters I identified with.
Yeah. And there's one passing reference in one season of, like, she says, like, oh, I thought you knew you were autistic. And there was no more conversation. It's never ever discussed. And I so wish that they would have owned that and played on that more for all of us who are enamored with Spencer Reed. And that's one of my comfort shows that I'm on, you know, rerun 8,000 of watching that series. And it's like, I the power of letting us have these words so much earlier, that I commend you for realizing that, given that you started the show before you had these diagnoses, and going back and making that addition.
Yeah, because I had so many shows like Spencer Reed. One of my shows I watched a ton in high school was Bones. And I identified with Bones, who the writers say, oh, she's autistic. We just never use the word on the show, but Bones is autistic. We wrote her to be. And I'm like, cool. Could you have fucking said so? Could you have said so just once?
Yes.
God, please. And then I'm a Trekkie, and this isn't Star Trek's fault because he's a fucking robot, but Data.
Yeah.
I was always like, why does he think he doesn't have feelings? Why does everyone think he doesn't? He does. He just shows them differently. Why is nobody else seeing this? He's just showing feelings differently. He has them. And I'm like, you're autistic. He's written like an autistic person. That's why you understand his feelings.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I wish, that we would. And I feel like I'm starting to see it more. And I don't know if it's my awareness or the circles that I run in, that there is this effort to start using these words more and start having these conversations more. Because like you said, 30 years ago, I mean, when we were kids, they were barely diagnosing these things. And they were diagnosing them in little boys that fit a very specific, like you said, with the ADHD, it was a very specific thing of hyperactivity. And
it's the same group, too. It's because they only did studies on them. It's white boys.
Yes.
Who were presumed to be heterosexual, because being queer also means you're less likely to get diagnosed. And especially being autistic, 70% of autistic people identify as LGBTQIA.
I was just going to say, doesn't being autistic then raise the correlation of queerness or accepting?
It does.
Queer issues.
And like, autistic people are 6 times more likely to show gender variance of some sort, either by being trans or non-binary, or I'm cis, but I'm obviously not too very concerned about performing some sort of femininity, because I know I am the type of woman I am.
Yeah.
Like, I am myself. I know who I am. So it makes me wonder just how many people are overlooked because it is made specifically for a heteronormative sort of culture, too.
Yeah. Do you know if there's anybody redoing this research, or is this still just at the point of we're realizing how bad we fucked up the original research?
There have been some new studies. So like, the study showing just how many autistic people are LGBTQIA was having autistic people self-report, and that was from 2018. It seems like there are some more studies coming out about, you know, comorbidities and stuff that include people of other genders, but again, it's mostly operating on a binary gender profile, and autistic people are more likely to be non-binary because our experience of gender is not the same, because it's all social cues,
right,
which we are not interpreting. So that's another area I'm asked a lot. Like, no, they can't see me. I have a red mohawk, but for a good chunk of my life, I had long like bleached blonde hair that I would do every day because I was told I wasn't being a girl correctly.
Yes.
All the time.
Same. That was my high school. I was actually required by my mother to wear skirts twice a week to school to make sure that I learned how to properly dress and present myself in a feminine way. Yes, which I now thoroughly rebel against, and I don't think I own any skirts or dresses anymore.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Like, there's a term that I learned called autogender, and it basically means your gender is influenced by your experience of being autistic. And that is either from how I don't understand these social cues or why these features get tacked on to certain genders when they're subject to social change at the drop of a hat, but also sensory issues too. So I get sensory issues with my own body. Mm-hmm. So in a skirt, like, skirts are cute. I like them. Mm-hmm. I do not want to feel my legs touching each other. I do not want to feel air circulating. I do not want to feel like I will get into sensory overload because of clothing.
Yeah.
And I was forcing myself to wear those things all the time.
Right.
But yeah, back on the research, it seems like there is some more research coming out. But unfortunately, I think most of the money is still being spent to find a way to get rid of us.
Yeah.
To find the genes for it so they can test in utero and do what they did to people with Down syndrome.
Right.
And it's kind of terrifying. And like last year, all these celebrities did this charity event for this thing called Next for Autism, raising several million dollars for something that is an offshoot of Autism Speaks and wants to find autistic genes and map the autistic gene so they can tell a parent in utero to decide whether or not to have the child. And like, I am pro-choice 100% of the time, no questions asked, but I'm also like, if you're not prepared to have a disabled child, you're not prepared to have a child.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So there's a lot of research still in that area. And that's another disheartening thing when you get a late diagnosis, is to find out you belong to this people group that the world so adamantly wants to get rid of.
Yeah. Yep. Since you mentioned them, because I feel like it is a group that is very heavily misunderstood to the detriment of autistic people, touch on Autism Speaks and why they need to go the fuck away.
Yeah. Autism Speaks is a hate group masked as a charity. They made commercials, and you can find it. Autistic people on TikTok have actually been using the commercial as a TikTok sound, which has been funny. But if you look up I Am Autism, the ad, they compare autism to pediatric AIDS and cancer. And they said having an autistic child will ruin your marriage and ruin your life, and you'll never do anything normal again. And I will take your child from you. And that commercial to me is a summation of how they see autistic people. So a lot of their money goes towards research to find genes for autism, which in a world where we weren't prone to eugenics at the drop of a hat might be cool so people could get diagnosis earlier, but autistic people know this is not going to be used for good. So when they found a way to test for Down syndrome in utero, most parents who got that test before their child was born opted to terminate the pregnancy some countries to a degree where they don't have a single person with Down syndrome born in like a year because of that. And that's eugenics.
Right.
And again, I am pro-choice 100%, but neurodiversity is part of biodiversity. And if we're homogenizing the types of brains that are being born into this world, nothing's going to change for the better. Everything's going to stay the same. And if a parent can't handle a disabled kid, they're not ready for a kid.
Yeah.
Like, they're not. So Autism Speaks spreads so much misinformation. They give a lot of money to a therapy called ABA, which is brought to you by the guy who made gay conversion therapy. And ABA, there's nuance that I've learned to it where ABA is the only therapy that a lot of insurance companies cover. and is the only form of childcare that a lot of parents of autistic kids are able to have. But it is basically forced masking lessons. But for children who are not white, they have to learn to mask or they may die.
Right.
So ABA is an option that's keeping them from dying. But for the majority of children, it's causing them active harm. It is 40 hours a week they put these kids in these lessons. And they punish them for autistic traits. They very frequently will say like, oh, is this your comfort item? Do you like this jacket? Oh, that's great. I love you. This is great. Okay. Oh, that's your special interest. If you don't talk to me about something other than your special interest, I'm going to take away your comfort item and you won't get it back until you engage with me in small talk. Or you're going to give me a hug. I know you don't like hugs, but you're going to hug me. And it's even still legal to shock autistic people with a device that is 9 times more powerful than a cattle prod in ABA therapy. If you look up the Judge Rotenberg Center in Massachusetts, that's where they still use it. And it's primarily Black and brown autistic people who are sent to that center and they are shocked with this device made specifically for punishment, for training us in a device that was deemed too cruel for animals in this quote unquote therapy. So Autism Speaks raises money to have more ABA therapists and provide those to teach us to hide who we are.
Yeah.
And it's gross. And there are no autistic people running the show. They have since, well, they receive criticism from people for that. So they have some autistic people on staff, but being autistic doesn't mean you're looking out for yourself. Like I know plenty of people who are siding with the oppressor because they think it'll grant them clemency of some sort.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's been one of the really hard things for me as I explore all of this for myself is, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, there's this relief that comes from having a diagnosis and having this language and this understanding about ourselves. But then there's also the side of society that's fucking awful and heartbreaking. And I come from a very privileged place of being cis, white, middle class, that it's so easy for me to not see it, that it's like, I didn't even realize it until I started having these conversations and kind of went down the rabbit hole of autism on TikTok. And it was like, how are we still letting this happen to people in America? And it's just been very eye-opening for me in a way that selfishly, a part of me wants to wish I could put it all back in the bottle.
Yeah. And I think we're given such selective information about autism too. Like, one of the jobs that I did most in my early 20s was being a nanny for autistic kids because I don't know. I just got them for some reason. I was just good with them. I don't know.
Wow.
But I had one view of what autism looked like.
Right.
These were all white, middle-class, autistic boys.
Yeah.
Who were non-speaking and had comorbid intellectual disabilities and were most likely to be diagnosed. So I didn't think that could be me. So I had to dismantle all of this internalized ableism I had no clue existed within me. And it's hard.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
They've done so many studies where autistic people decide they don't like an autistic person before they've spoken to them by our faces. A lot of the time they like have done studies where they say, would you want to hang out with this person you met outside of this study? And autistic people are most likely to go, no, no way. And that hurts. And I can see that reflected in my own life in the ways I taught myself to mask too.
Yeah.
To always like, check your face. Do you look mean? Do you look mean right now? Fix your face. It's exhausting. But yeah. I think part of unmasking is like, you know what? I don't give a solitary fuck. This is who I am. If you like me, you like me.
Yeah. And if you don't, you're not my people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So to flip this, because I think this is an important next step in the conversation, what are some things you think we could be doing as a society to better acknowledge and support neurodivergent folks? Like, going beyond, like, one of the first steps is us having these conversations publicly and diving into the ins and outs. But is there something workplaces, friend groups, people who are just open to being educated that we could start doing next?
Yeah, for me, I think I'm biased to say communication is probably one of the cornerstones of what you understand, just because linguistics degree. But learning that not everyone communicates the same way, just the basic understanding that not everyone communicates the same way is groundbreaking. So the world is centered around the neurotypical way of communicating, specifically holistic. So someone with ADHD will have problems with some communicating, the interrupting, the info dumping, but not the same way an autistic person does. So they have a communication struggle, but in the guise of privilege, they have more privilege than the autistic person. So understanding, like, hey, this person didn't interrupt because they're rude or because they don't care about you, they're going to forget this pertinent thing that is pertinent to what you were saying because they were listening to you and they want to share it with you because they care.
Yeah.
And teaching, you know, communication skills. So I think for me, one of the things I boiled it down to is don't assume the worst. So there are a lot of things that I have said or someone said, I can't believe you'd say that to me. And I'm like, whoa, what did I don't know what I said, because there's subtext assumed in something I'm saying. And I'm good at a lot of things, but subtext is not one of them. I don't know that I could really add subtext without it being super obvious and overt. So people assume the worst. So learning that some people don't operate in subtext. So ask for clarification before you assume the worst of what someone said to you. Ask them, did you mean this? So I think one example, like from my own life, was I had had a meltdown. I was sitting on the kitchen floor and my girlfriend was like, hey, what contributed to your meltdown? Like, what's going on today? What can we kind of change around to take some of this off of you? And I just said, because we had all been sick, all three of us in the house had all been sick with the flu for a week, and there had been a really busy week before. And all I said was, I haven't gotten to really clean the way I like to in a couple of weeks. And she kind of got upset. And I have two partners. My husband's autistic and my girlfriend is ADHD. And I'm when you both it.
That's a hell of a household.
Yeah, I'm when you both it. So communication is interesting. But she kind of got sad for a second. She said, wait, were you upset because you haven't gotten the opportunity to clean? Or were you trying to tell me that you're upset that I haven't cleaned either?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? No, you had the flu too. Right. I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying we haven't had the opportunity to, and I'm overwhelmed with how much I have to do today. So instead of assuming I was coming after her and saying something shitty to her with subtext, she asked for clarification.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool, okay. And we avoided something. But there's so many times in my life where someone has assumed subtext where I did not have any, and someone's mad at me and I'm just confused and I don't know why.
Yeah.
So I think the number one rule is teach people to stop assuming the worst and then ask for clarification.
Yeah. Yep. I love that. I think that's a great one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the two simplest things.
Yeah.
I could say ask for clarification.
Yeah. I feel like that's just like human function as a whole, and maybe because my lens is what it is, but like, man, can we just be more clear, be more concise, and yeah.
And don't assume the worst.
No, and like you said, ask for clarification and don't assume the worst, yeah.
Which I understand from other studies is, I think, easier for me being autistic. So autistic people are more likely to assume someone they don't know is a good person. Just baseline, like, assume that you're good. Holistic people, when asked, are more likely to assume bad until I know otherwise.
Right.
Autistic people are more likely to give something charitable to a cause they care about, even when their name's not on it.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite parts about being autistic is that sense of justice and that sense of equality and assuming like, hey, assume someone has good intentions until otherwise, protect yourself, but assume the best.
Yeah.
So I think that would go a long way for any neurotype.
Yeah, agreed. I think another one I'm going to throw out there, I think it would be really helpful, and actually this applies to so many aspects of life, if we would have more conversations off of binaries. Like you said, autism isn't, we always talk about the spectrum, but it's not a point A to point B and where do you fall on the line. It's a wheel. And I'm starting to try to do more educational posts with social media that go with each of these episodes. And that is absolutely going to be one of the biggest pieces that goes out with this episode, because like I actually scored really well on the social thing. And I think that's where I got missed and I got lost, is I do pretty well socially. I learned the eye contact thing was, you know, figured that one out, and mimicry and like, but there's other, it's the high support needs, the low support needs. And when you find out someone in your life is autistic, what are their support needs specifically?
And the fact that they get labeled as being a static thing, like you said, their support needs forever. Like,
yeah,
that's not true. Like I am in the middle of autistic burnout with this pandemic, and my support needs are higher than they've ever been too.
Yes. And I think for me, the pandemic has been great because I don't have to interact with the rest of the world very much. So I've been allowed a lot of time to recover because there was no change in my world other than actually less people. And like, I already worked from home and now I don't have to socialize. On top of that, I was allowed to isolate for months on end. So it's been really great for me, but I know I'm starting to tease apart what impact my traumatic brain injury has had on all of this. And as my brain has healed and I adapt to that injury, how that plays across all the different needs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point that, even within that wheel of support needs, it's also not static within any given moment of time.
But I think just dismantling the notion that things are binary and they're going to stay the same all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I pretty much every conversation I can bounce through my brain right now, we could really just get away from binaries and we'd be doing a lot better.
Right.
So awesome. Thank you so much, Brianne. This has been so much information and so great. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to learn more about you or your podcast?
Yeah. So my personal social media, you can find me on Twitter at Hot Sauce Ghost and on Instagram as Brianne Leeson. My show, you can find on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the handle at Lucky Winner Show. Yeah. And if you follow me on my personal accounts, it's mostly memes and some autism stuff. So
awesome. Well, I'll make sure that stuff's in the show notes so people can check you out. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.